In today's episode of Cultivate Contentment, I had the pleasure of hosting an enriching conversation with Emily Rushell. Emily is a champion for the leaders, thinkers, doers, and dreamers of rural communities and beyond. Her thought leadership defies expectations, busts limiting beliefs, and asks better questions to understand this big, beautiful world and the people in it. Whether from the stage, behind the Gathering Growth podcast mic, or within her signature virtual communities, she fosters conversations to help women heal, grow, evolve, and build empathy bridges to transform from the inside out. Emily shares her journey through rural life, motherhood, and personal growth. We discuss her transition from being an elementary education teacher to working in the nonprofit sector and eventually becoming an entrepreneur and coach. The conversation highlights the challenges of rural life, societal expectations on women, and the importance of self-care. Emily also emphasizes building connections and investing in relationships. I hope you enjoy today's episode.
When we have those moments of, I should be doing this, or I need to be doing this, or I have to do this, I invite you to get curious about, well, why? And have you actually defined what makes you feel good in the roles that you're in? Because without that, we are chasing a target that is always moving, which always makes us feel like we're not enough.
Are you a rural farming woman, wife, or mother struggling to find peace in your busy life? Do you find yourself trying to squeeze joy out of your daily routine, manage stress that seems never ending, and somehow reconnect with your passions in the midst of it all? Do you love your rural life, yet often feel overwhelmed by the challenges it brings? Welcome to Cultivate Contentment, the podcast designed just for you. I'm Jessica Knight, a fellow rural woman, wife, and mother, and I get it. I've been there. Right there in the trenches, juggling the demands of farm life, motherhood, and carving out moments to take care of myself. Come along with me and my guests as we explore balancing farm life with personal needs on a realistic level. Practical ways to sprinkle a little joy and peace into your daily routine, nurturing relationships without losing your sense of self, and how to keep stress at bay and prevent burnout, all while staying focused on what we really want, feeling content and settled in our lives. So whether you're savoring a cup of coffee before the morning chaos begins, stealing a moment of quiet on your drive to town, or popping in your earbuds while wrestling with laundry and dishes, I invite you to join me. Let's laugh, learn, and cultivate contentment together. Welcome to Cultivate Contentment. I'm your host, Jessica Knight, and today I am so excited to be joined by my first guest, Emily Rushell. Emily has been pivotal in me getting to this point where I am, and I know that all of my guests are going to get so much value from her. So welcome, Emily.
Thanks for having me. I am so honored to be here.
So we've gotten over the tech glitches for the morning, we are hoping, and this will be the one that actually goes.
Let's hope so. Let's hope so.
So for those that don't know you, can you give us a brief introduction of where you're from, who makes up your family, and what you do?
Absolutely. Okay. So I hail from West Central Illinois in the good US of A. We live on my husband's family farm. We grow corn and soybeans primarily. I did not grow up in agriculture. I grew up in what I thought was a small town, in kind of the Metro East St. Louis area, so closer to a big city. We have three kids now, let's see, ages 7, 5, and almost 10 months, which is wild to say out loud. And as far as what I do, I love this question because I have done and I have been many versions of myself, which is part of kind of my story and a lot of the stories of the women I work with, especially in communities like the ones we live in, just in or connected to agriculture in small towns and in rural communities. And I think I can speak for myself and a lot of other people that there was so much pressure on me to figure out what I wanted to be when I grew up for a long time. And so I started my career as an elementary education teacher. I taught fourth grade for 5 years. And I thought, this is it. This is where I'm going to be for the rest of my life. Like, how cute, the farmer and the teacher, they write like country songs about that stuff. And then my life took a totally different path unexpectedly. And I can't attribute it to anything other than my intuition showing up before I had even really truly learned to listen to it. And from the classroom, I spent 4 years in the nonprofit space as a program director at a YMCA overseeing summer camp and after school, which was very much within my professional wheelhouse, but also learning the inner workings of marketing and HR and budgeting and just being in charge of people. And it's really there that I found the world of personal growth and development, which was my gateway into entrepreneurship. It's where I started my health journey while postpartum with our second. It's really where I just expanded my worldview of what I was capable of. And so I've been now self-employed as an entrepreneur for 3 years, and that has grown and changed and evolved in a million more ways than I could have ever predicted. But during that time, I have done one-on-one coaching, hosted small group masterminds, brought women across the country and the world like Jess to in-person retreats, traveled for public speaking, and I host my own podcast called Gather and Growth. So over the past couple of years, that has, like I said, really grown and evolved as I have, which is the best part of being an entrepreneur, is that my business has changed just as rapidly and just as expansively as I have allowed myself to. So I started talking about goals and habits, and now I am just in the depths of exploring curiosities about all sorts of things, healing, motivations, why we do the things that we do. Yeah, just all sorts of really cool stuff. And my favorite part of what I do is getting to be in community with women like you. So that's what's brought me here today.
I love this, Emily. It's such a little concise package of what you do, but there is so much more to it than that. Like, you make it just sound so simple.
Yeah. Listening to my husband try to describe what I do is still one of my favorite activities because it's actually just really hard.
So if we take it back a step, when you moved out to a very small rural town, were there expectations that you had versus the reality of life in the small rural community?
Ooh, that's a really good question, because I think in a lot of ways I was prepared for the differences. You know, I knew that I wanted to raise my family more in the country or out of town than where I grew up. I very much grew up in a neighborhood. We were like 15 minutes from downtown St. Louis. And so marrying a farmer and moving out to the country wasn't that left field for me, as I feel like it is for some people that I know. But what I hadn't taken into consideration was, okay, not only am I 45 minutes away from the grocery store, that's fine, but the grocery store is in a town that's not all that exciting itself. And now it has come a long way in the 8 years since I moved here, but it was like, okay, not only is my house physically removed from big things, but even the big things, there's like not that many options. And so, you know, when I think back to that time, it's, oh, we can't just run to the store to get something. Like, when I go to the grocery store, I have to plan. Or when I'm scheduling appointments, I need to schedule every appointment ever in one day. All the way down to not only what does it look like to make new friends in a small town, but as an adult, as a mom, right? Every other time in my life where I've been building a social community, it's kind of been by proximity, whether it's elementary school, going away to college, working at summer camp, you know, working in other jobs. The uncertainty of moving to a place where literally the only people I knew were my in-laws, like my mother-in-law, my father-in-law, and my husband, that was weird. And then 11 days into living here, I got pregnant. And so then I'm immediately sick and not social in the same way that I had used to be. And so, yeah. And then, you know, coming into the farm, just to speak to that aspect, if someone in your listenership relates to that, you know, I had expectations around what planting and harvest were going to look like. I knew it was busy. I knew it was all hands on deck. I knew like I'd never see my husband during that time. It was like in our wedding vows.
That is adorable that it's in your wedding vows.
Yeah. Like we wrote our own vows and I was like, I promise to love and support you during planting and harvest or something. But, you know, as we were moving back, he was also trying to get established in farming. It's just he and his dad. He's an only child. And so he was really trying to hit the ground running and prove himself or whatever you want to call it. And so what I hadn't anticipated is that he was just going to be gone all the time. Mm-hmm. All the time. And I remember the first summer after my son was born, and he was gone literally sun up to sundown, which here in the summer, sun up to sundown is a really long time because it doesn't get dark until like 9:30 or 10. And I just remember a point that I was like, I did not sign up for this. Like, I don't care what other people say is normal. I love you. I'm all in on this like farm wife thing, but like, no, I am not solar parenting every day of the year for the rest of my life. And, you know, that was the start of very many conversations to really change the relationship that he and I both had with work and family and time and worthiness and so much more that we can get into. But that was hard. And I see women reach out in like Facebook groups about similar circumstances. And so many people say, well, that's just the way it is. You married into agriculture, of course. And I just refuse to believe that anything has to be a certain way.
Yeah, that is the response you see so often. Mm-hmm. And I think it is a changing generation thing that we're saying, well, actually, no, we're not doing that anymore. And something needs to change because we can't keep going on like this.
Very much so. You know, I think so many people say things like faith, family, farm, but really it's like farm, 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 farm. Oh yeah, I also have kids.
Yes.
And not with cruel intentions, right? Like the to-do list just never ends. And farmers are in such an industry where it's normalized and celebrated to be hardworking, which is such a beautiful trait, but comes with a really dark side of burnout and mental health and like, when is enough enough? And, you know, Andrew and I have both really had to look in the mirror and confront the way that showed up for both of us professionally and realizing the to-do list actually never ends. And so we have to be the ones to put the boundaries in place and say, this is enough and I am enough. Other priorities in my life are just as, if not more important than the work that I do on a day-to-day basis.
And I think it is like they haven't seen anything different. Like they see that this is what their parents did. And so this is the way we're going to do it. And it's that shift in thinking that has to come from, like you said, both you and your partner to make any changes in this area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That generational relationship. And like you said, I think more and more people in our generation are talking about it, but it's hard. And I think this transcends so many different topics, but it's really hard to imagine a different reality when it hasn't been modeled for you. And so whether it's our parents or ourselves or the other people that are involved in our operation or just anything, if we don't see an example of the alternative, there's more resistance to believing that something else is possible. So I do have a lot of hope for the future of agriculture and just, you know, anything as people or as parents is that we have more access than ever to people who are doing life differently than us. And so we can see the positive effect of the changes that we have curiosity around creating. But anytime change is confronted, especially when there's generational disagreements in it, it's hard. It's really hard.
Yes. I think succession planning is one of the things that I'm glad that we didn't have to do, because it's just when you put different generations and different expectations in a room, it's really hard to figure those things out. So you've moved to the farm, you've been working as a teacher, then at the YCMA, and then you've had kids. How did that impact on your journey and like your personal growth and how your life suddenly changed when motherhood came along?
I love this question because I think a lot of times as moms, and I'm going to make sweeping generalizations, a lot of people say they like have lost themselves in motherhood. And I've been really thinking a lot lately about how is it motherhood, or have we just collectively gone through the experience of losing ourselves into the expectations and needs of other people? And obviously kids is like a really big example of that, right? We physically give them our entire body and then some. But I think it transcends into so many other things too. Expectations at work, expectations of marriage, expectations in who we think we need to be based on what we see on the internet or from Sally down the road or our mother-in-law or whatever. And, you know, when I look back on my own motherhood journey, I see a lot of that. But in so many ways, I think I also found myself in a lot of ways in motherhood, you know, as a new mom for the very first time. And I know not everyone shares this experience, but it was the first time I really remember choosing to trust myself in my intuition. You know, as a new mom or as an expecting mom, there's so much information being thrown your way. Here's how you should feed your baby. Here's how your baby should sleep. Here's how you should introduce food to your baby. The list goes on and on and on and on and on about the ways that we tell moms that they should or shouldn't, you know, raise their kids or else you're going to screw them up forever. Amen. And that was the first time that I was like, no, I am going to filter all of this through what I intuitively know is best for me and my family. And that started with breastfeeding, and I am a proud co-sleeping mom. I could talk about that forever and a half. And that's really counter-cultural in a lot of ways, which is crazy. Everything that we have done with our kids has been like, how does this feel for us? What makes sense for our family? What made sense a really long time ago for babies, right? I think so much of the baby industry, so to speak, is part of a, you know, this is going to go down a whole nother rabbit hole, but like this like capitalistic corporate structure of like, we need to pay money for our convenience or for solutions or for our babies to do something that is different than what they instinctively know. And so, yeah, I don't know. In early motherhood, I think I really leaned into my intuition. And of course, like in the process of having babies and toddlers and little ones, there is so much that we give. And, you know, a lot of that coincided with my personal growth journey, which started when my first would have been 2 at the time. My second was 6 months old. I remember sitting on the couch and being like, I don't even like the way that I'm existing in the world anymore. Like, here I am. I have this job that I love. Farming is, we're getting established there. I have this baby that I adore. I have this like toddler, like life is good. Life is conventionally exactly. I checked all the boxes. I did everything that everyone said was going to make me feel happy. And I feel dead inside, which I actually hear from a lot of women and is devastating because we immediately turn it back on ourselves. And why can't I just be grateful and sink ourselves into this deep shame spiral? Because we have everything we've ever wanted and it doesn't feel quite right.
Mm-hmm.
But I realized in that moment that I had been giving so much of myself to literally everyone and everything other than myself. And I was so far down the list. I was so far dead last that I was just burnt out and angry and frustrated. Like, I'd go to work and give 125% to get the gold star and come home and be resentful that my children existed. Not because they existed, but just because they were kids and demanded more of my time and energy. And I'm like, something has to be different than this. Like, this is not the mom I want to be. This is not the person I want to be. And so that's what ignited a health journey. And it was for the first time in my life that I had approached that from a place of really loving and taking care of and nurturing myself versus this cycle of self-loathing and shame of like, I need to be more thin, or I need to look a certain way. I just like wanted to feel better. I wanted to have more energy, and I really wanted to take care of myself to be the kind of mom I wanted to be. And that led me into a rabbit hole of personal growth and development, which ultimately sparked everything that I'm doing now. And so, you know, when I think back to those early days of running a half marathon for the first time or taking the chance on myself for my business, it was all for my family and for my kids, but also it was a really early understanding of I could no longer be the person that I wanted to be for my kids if I was continuing to drown in what everyone else needed and putting myself last.
I love that. I think it's for a lot of women, they get to that point and the solution is I'm not doing enough. I've got to do more. Yeah. I've got to put more things on my plate. I've got to help more people. And that can often be, you know, I'll get another job offer or I'll start a business or something. So I love that yours started with, well, actually, I need to look after myself. It's need to be a health journey. I've got to focus on me. And Do you feel like rural women, it's something they struggle with, is prioritizing themselves, especially in those early seasons of motherhood and putting value on looking after themselves?
Yeah, I love that you bring up that idea of like, I just need to add more to my plate. Because we see all these representations of what other people are doing and we're like, oh my gosh, if I just do this, then I'm going to feel a certain way. Once I do this, then people are going to think of me a certain way, or then I will be enough. And then we just keep putting things on our plate like it's, I was going to say Thanksgiving dinner. I don't know if that reference doesn't translate. No, oh, that's funny.
We get the reference. It's okay.
Right. But we're like living every day with this overflowing plate and then being like, oh my gosh, why don't I have energy to do this all? It must be because I suck. I need to double down and try harder. Which is so crazy when you think about it in that analogy, but we don't have the capacity to do anything new or make changes when we're already so overwhelmed. And so I think a first step in that is honestly just taking inventory of every single little thing that is on your mental load, on your physical load, on your calendar, and culling through, like, does this make sense for me in this season? And to your point in bringing up rural women, and especially in those vulnerable seasons of new motherhood or moving back to the farm or something like that, I think we put a lot of expectation on ourselves and each other of like what showing up well in those seasons looks like. And so again, it goes back to those expectations is, why are you doing the things that you do? Who are you doing that for? Who told you that that's what a good mom had to do or a good farm wife had to do? We see these little snippets on social media of all these people doing all of these things, and we hold ourselves against a measuring stick to all of them. And then we wonder why we don't feel like we're enough. And so when we have those moments of, I should be doing this, or I need to be doing this, or I have to do this, I invite you to get curious about, well, why? And have you actually defined what makes you feel good in the roles that you're in? Because without that, we are chasing a target that is always moving, which always makes us feel like we're not enough. I've gone through this exercise with several of my clients is like, who just feel like they're failing as a mom, or I'm not being a good wife, or I'm not doing enough around the house, or I'm not doing enough as an employee or as a business owner. I'm like, let's actually write down what is good. Like, define your definition of, yeah, that feels good. And by the time we do that, chances are they're already doing it. And I'm like, okay, so what is it that's making you feel not good enough? Well, I should be doing this and this and this. I'm like, do you even like that? Do you actually like making field meals? And do you actually need to? Like, can your husband pack a lunch? Like, come on.
Mm-hmm.
And that's maybe some people really, really love that. Brings them so much joy. It's part of the whole tradition of it. Great, wonderful. But it is not my journey, right? Or, you know, this expectation around what our house looks to look like. Like, the mental gymnastics I went through around hiring a housekeeper, guys, and it is the greatest gift we have ever given ourselves. Or even like going back to the conversations Andrew and I have had, and we recorded an episode, he and I, about like our journey through all of this. I'm sure Jess can link it if she wants to.
Yes, highly recommend listening to that one.
Ah, thanks. But us recognizing together what preconceived expectations we were bringing into our marriage unconsciously around who's responsible for the dishes, like who does blah, blah, blah with the kids, like who does what with work, like whose jobs take priority, stuff like that. And really having those conversations and recognizing, oh, okay, in this season of life, X, Y, and Z is actually not that important to me. Like, it might be in a different season of life, but I can't do everything. And I no longer feel like I have to do everything in order to be good. Because the truth is, you are already good. You are already worthy. You are already enough as you are today simply by being yourself. But we've attached so much worth to what we do and who we are for other people and what we output. And so that's taken a lot of rewiring for me. And I don't even know what the original question was, but I could go on a rampage about this for a really long time.
That's okay. I love that you mentioned how that mental battle you went with over hiring a cleaner, because I did the exact same thing. And I talked to so many women And the thing was, when I mentioned it to my husband, he was just like, yeah, hire the cleaner. You do so much stuff. Just do it. Like, what's the big deal?
Yeah.
And in my head, I'd gone over it and over it and gone, oh, no, but that's my job. I'm meant to be able to do those things. I'm a failure for not being able to look after the house and do everything else that I'm doing as well. But then
yeah,
you just sort of hit this point where you go, actually, no, it's okay to outsource that. It's one little thing in yeah. the whole scheme of everything that I do in a week. I love that you mentioned your husband in this, because I think that is something that many women struggle with, is how do I bring my husband along when I want to make these changes? When I'm going through this personal mm-hmm. growth journey and he's looking at me like I'm a crazy person, how do I get mm-hmm. him to not necessarily come along with me, but understand why I'm doing what I'm doing?
I love this question. And also something Andrew and I talked about in that podcast episode is, like, I think a lot of times as women, we feel like we need to fix someone else's problems for them. So we get down a journey and we're like, oh, I just need to get my husband. Like, he needs to do this. He needs to do this. He needs to do this. And then everything will be better. And whether or not that's true, you can't do someone else's work for them. And so, you know, I think at the minimum, what you can ask for is, as you start making changes, if they're like, wait, what's going on here? Be like, this is why I'm doing what I'm doing. This is what I need. And here's how you can support me. And you don't have to understand, but I would hope, anticipate, expect your respect or your support in X, Y, and Z ways. And that's also a really big thing. Like, as women, to recognize our needs, advocate for our needs, and communicate our needs is like a whole nother topic. But I think, you know, in terms of, so many women ask me, like, how do I get my husband on board? I'm like, well, for them, it's, think about, like, you didn't get to the place you are today overnight. Like, it was a slow unraveling. You saw something online, or you heard a podcast episode, or you read a book, and then you did the next thing, and then you did the next thing, and then you did the next thing. And then all of a sudden we're like, hey, come do this too. And our people in our life are like, wait, what? One thing that can be really helpful is, you know, even just sharing a podcast episode. Like, that is exclusively what my husband does when he's driving in the semi now, because the radio cuts out anyway. And so, you know, I would be like, hey, I heard this episode and it really got me thinking about XYZ. If you have time to listen to it, I'd love to talk to you. The people that we are in relationship with in marriage, hopefully, want to also connect with us. And especially when you're in the stage with young kids and you're like, are we roommates or like what? It can be nice to have an invitation for a conversation that's not about who's picking up the kids from daycare or getting more diapers or who's putting the kids to bed, whatever. Mm-hmm. And so I think an invitation and also just sharing what you are going through mm-hmm. is always our best tool for influencing anyone, whether it's your community online, whether it's your spouse, whether it's your mom, whether it's your friend, because you sharing your journey allows someone the opportunity to see the positive effect of it and get curious about their journey. And you can do that in a way that's like very safe, non-threatening, like, here's what I'm trying, here's what it's working. And chances are your partner is going to pick up on the positives as well. We were just talking about this in a mastermind I was in yesterday. They were talking about like wanting to continue on and how they were talking to their husbands about continuing to make the investment. And one of the girls' husbands was like, I actually don't know what happens in those meetings, but you are like a significantly happier person because of it. Like, please do it forever. And I was like, oh man, yeah, I need like husband testimonials, right? Because someone doesn't even have to fully understand what you're doing or why you're doing it to see the positive result. And I remember a distinct day, Andrew sent me like a voice message or a Marco Polo or something. And he was like, I get it now. And I'm like, get what? Like, what'd you get? Something at the store? He's like, this whole personal growth thing. Like, where do I go from here? What do I do? And I'm like, ah, the thing about personal growth is it's very personal. But here's some books that I liked. Here's a podcast you could listen to. And I think another thing that comes up when one person in the relationship, because it's not always women. I interviewed Lou Bluth on my podcast, whose husband was actually the first to kind of go through this whole personal growth journey. And we talked about what that was like from her perspective, but it can feel really threatening. Mm-hmm. Like, oh my gosh, is my partner going to outgrow me? They're changing, right? As we should, as people, we should change. But when the person that we're in relationship with starts to change in a way that's different than the way that we've known them in, it can feel scary. It can feel like we're going to lose them or something. And so I always encourage women to approach those conversations with, I want us to grow together. I don't expect us to stay the same. I know throughout our life we are going to evolve, and I want us to do that hand in hand, separately and together, but not necessarily away from each other. And so I know my husband will say, like, he needed the reassurance for me of that I wasn't trying to change or grow or evolve to be different or distant or apart from him, but that I was really looking to push myself and therefore our family into a place that felt more aligned with where I wanted to be.
I think too that sometimes we underestimate them, and we make mm-hmm. these assumptions and judgments on, oh, if I'm going to do that, they're not going to understand that. They're not going to be on board with it.
Yeah.
And a lot of the time they'll just look at you going, okay, well, if that's what you need, if that's what makes you happy, then go ahead. It was exactly like from your mastermind, like that husband said, it makes you a happier person. I don't necessarily understand what you do there, but it makes you happy. So go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that is a good point. We oftentimes in scenarios play all of these worst case scenarios in our head and like project our insecurities as what someone else will think or say or do in reaction to what we're doing. And the reality is, like, a lot of times it really is just our assumptions and our own insecurities and projections. So often, though, like, what actually happens is so much better than we could ever assume. And again, yeah, they're like, okay, that sounds great. Or like, people are so consumed with what's actually going on in their own head and their own life. They don't actually care what you do. But we tell ourselves all these stories about, oh my gosh, if I do this thing, then the whole world's going to come crumbling down and everyone's going to think blah, 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 blah about me. And whether or not that's true, it actually doesn't matter. But chances are it's not.
Yeah, I think that relates back in so much, like you said, like in small towns, that not everyone is necessarily interested in what you're doing. And something that might feel like a really big thing to you, they're just like, oh, okay, that's nice. You're doing that little thing. And I think that's another thing, is that we tend to let that sometimes get us down because we feel like we've made this huge step and the people around us don't understand what an impact that made on us.
It's so funny. When I started my Instagram, I started a totally separate account because I didn't want a single person I knew in real life to actually see what I was doing, which is so funny looking back on it, but what I needed at the time. So I have no regrets. And even still, I can confidently talk to a stranger about what I do and what I'm passionate about easier than someone I know in real life, which is so funny. And I would love to explore the psychology behind that because I know I'm not alone. Oh my gosh. Like, I travel across the country to speak, but ask me to speak locally and I'd be nervous in a whole different way. But what's so funny is I had placed all of these assumptions on what people in my local community would think about what I was doing, you know, sharing online, having a podcast, doing the work that I do. And like you said, people are either indifferent, don't actually understand what I do or why I do it, or are incredibly into it. Like, the number of people I know in real life who have reached out to me or I've seen in passing who have said something like, I saw you do X, Y, and Z, and so now I believe it's possible for me to do X, Y, and Z. It's just like, you never know who is watching and who is being inspired by you just doing life and the things that you do. And so, sure, I could almost guarantee without having any concrete information around it that there are people in my small town and beyond that think what I'm doing is crazy or that I'm weird or don't get it or like want to talk shit about it. But I'm at the point also, this is my business and my livelihood and how I feed my family. Like, that'd be like you talking bad about me because I'm a teacher, which like people do. So whatever. Like, people who spend their time like judging what someone else is doing with their time, effort, and energy, like that's a whole nother story. And their opinions don't actually have to hold any weight because that's like a way bigger reflection on what's going or not going for them. So
I think that being able to just say, this is my lane, I'm doing my thing, I'm sticking in it, and you know, if you've got those opinions, you can just stay over there and that's fine. We don't have to go along the same path and do the same thing. I know that you're very big on building community for women. I've attended Emily's retreat and I'm in one of her masterminds. Now, I'm putting a shout out here to other Australian women. Jump on board and get Emily to run some that are in our time zone so that I'm not getting up in the middle of the night, okay?
If oh, we get that's enough hilarious. People, yeah, then, no, Jess. Yeah. That's hilarious. Props to Jess flying literally across the world for me.
So I'd love to talk more about how important you feel community is for rural women.
I think community is really important for all women. And I'll get to the rural piece, but in these spaces that I've cultivated, whether a mastermind, a small group, a retreat, we come in with one intention. Maybe it's starting a business or chasing these goals or whatever. But what I actually see is how healing it is to be in a room with people who say, me too. I see you. And, you know, if we think about the way that humans were designed to be, long before we lived in these little concrete boxes so far away from each other, women have always done life together. In every early civilization or every group of people that is kind of separate from, I guess, the modern world, we could say, women are side by side and hand in hand, raising their kids together, doing the washing together, like whatever it looks like. We have never been in such a time that we are physically, mentally, and emotionally so disconnected, which is ironic because we're theoretically more connected than ever with these little internet boxes we all have access to. But so much of it is passive connection where we're just scrolling by. We're feeling, you know, kind of connected, but not really fully seen, heard, held, and understood. And so whether virtually or in person, like I cannot understate the importance of being with people who deeply understand, appreciate, know, and love you for where you've been, who you are, and who you're growing into. And I think as rural women, just by physical proximity, this is hard because I can see a neighbor's house from my house, but it's not like I'm in a neighborhood where, you know, we share a backyard and we're like chatting in the morning as we take out the trash. That's just not where I live. And so it takes a lot more intentionality to build meaningful relationships just by proximity. Or when you're in ag, not even everyone in your small town gets what it's like to be in harvest season or whatnot. But it is crucial. It is crucial as people and as women to surround ourselves with women that we trust. And it's kind of a complicated thing because a lot of times I think we sit around like, where's this village that I was promised? Or I don't have any friends. I don't know how to make friends. And it comes with a need for radical bravery and vulnerability on our part. Like someone's not necessarily going to knock on your door and be like, hi, I see that you're alone. I'm ready to be your best friend. I mean, maybe, but that would be really cool. It comes from us putting ourselves out there, which is scary because it feels like we're just opening ourselves up to rejection. But, and that is a very real thing, you know, which is something anyone with school age kids that we're also navigating is like, not every person that exists in the world is necessarily going to be someone you click with or that has your best interest in mind. And sometimes you put yourself into relationships and your heart gets broken, but it is so often not a reflection of you and more so of the other person or just a mismatch in the relationship. But the more that we pour into ourselves and cultivating our self-worth outside of our relationship to other people and the need for someone else to fill these pieces of ourselves, the more we are able to show up wholly for other people and welcome people in. I've just been shown time and time again over the past couple of years how much women really do crave and want each other. This mean girls rhetoric we were sold for so many decades is just made up and not true. And I think we're seeing now more than ever that that's the case. Gosh, even just this round of the Olympics, like I cannot open my phone without seeing some example of women just radically supporting each other in a way that we have never seen on that stage before. And so I have hope that this generation is valuing that and is rejecting the idea that we need to be pinned against or in competition with each other, because as cliche as it sounds, like, the rising tide lifts all shifts. And when we pull our hands back to help the women behind us or wrap them alongside of us, like, the women at the top are collaborating. The women who are genuinely aligned and fulfilled and joyful and successful from, like, all other standard metrics of success are doing so in relationship with each other. And it does take intentionality.
That connection is just so important. And, you know, I can say from your masterminds the impact that it has on me. And the internet is a hard thing because, in one sense, there's so much overwhelm and there's so much comparison. But without it, I would never have met you or any of the other women in the mastermind that I'm in. So it's like you said, it's that managing and scrolling past the things that don't matter, but having intentional consumption and finding the community for you that is there.
Yeah. And so maybe it's joining a Facebook group. Maybe it's, you know, inviting someone local out to coffee or the moms at school. Like, if you are sitting home also wishing you had friends, someone else is having the same thought. And so go out to coffee, start the play date, get involved with something at your local library, like, whatever that looks like. And I also want to bring up, you know, in this time where we do have the ability to take part in something like a mastermind or go to a retreat, which, first of all, 1,000,000% recommend. The other day I was starting a new program and someone said, oh, I just kind of feel like I'm paying for my friends. And I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. First of all, any relationship requires some sort of an exchange of energy. It requires an investment, whether it's time, whether it is energy, whether it is finances. Like, since the beginning of time, there has always been a barrier of entry to being in a relationship or finding your people. Think about, like, a country club or a gym or going to a pottery class or something like that. If you are doing anything with the intention of building relationship, like, it's okay to invest your time, your energy, and your money into being in spaces with people who understand where you're at and support the vision for your life of where you want to be.
Mm-hmm. I could keep talking like this for hours, but we do need to wrap it up. So I'm going to ask the question that all of my guests will be getting, and I'm sorry I didn't give you pre-warning of this one. What is it in your life that is currently working for you to cultivate contentment, be it a daily habit or a nightly routine, a product that you use, or some new journey that you're taking?
Ooh, I love this. Okay, so this is simple and everyone can do it and it's totally free. Although if it's winter where you're at, you may not be as fun. You know, there's all this, like, buzzword around, like, grounding and things like that. But I have had so much curiosity around, again, just like the way that we're existing in the digital age and how disconnected we are from the natural systems of humanity, the way humans were truly designed to be. And so, you know, for a really long time, I was like, I feel better when I go on walks. I'm moving my body. Like, that's great. Dude, it's like the fresh air and the sunshine and being outside. And that sounds so simple. But I've been getting up in the morning and before I do just about anything else, especially open my phone, just going and putting my feet in the grass. And it doesn't have to be for a long time. It could literally be for a minute. But feeling the fresh air on my face, feeling the sun on my face, there is actual energy in the earth that is transmitted to our bodies when we are connected to it. And so it's such a simple way to instantly feel better and kind of reduces that anxiety and that stress and all these, like, other things that we've created for ourselves, and just brings me back to, like, whether you want to call it earth energy or aligning with your higher power or God or whatever, whatever it is, the flavor of what you believe in. I just think there's a lot of healing magic in it that's making me feel really at peace and aligned in my life.
I love that. It's so simple and yet we take such things for granted and sort of don't notice them. And then when we start doing them, we're just like, oh, wow, why didn't I start doing that a long time ago?
Right. The things that make us feel our best are actually very simple.
Mm-hmm. Emily, thank you so much for joining me today. I cannot express the impact that you've had on my journey. And so for anyone that is wanting to follow along with you, get in contact. Where's the best place to find you?
Oh, well, Jess, you have had such an impact on me as well. I just absolutely adore you and have been honored to walk alongside this journey with you and watch you come into yourself and then use that to pour into the women around you, even just starting a podcast and all of the space and all that's to come. It's just incredibly inspiring and exciting to watch the women that I know walk in their power and want to make the world a better place and really reach out to women and say, you're not alone. I see you. I love you. I understand you and you belong here. So you are doing that beautifully and I'm honored to be part of it. Online, I hang out the most on Instagram at Emily Rushell, EmilyRushell. Beyond that, my podcast is called Gather in Growth. I just hit my 2-year anniversary, which is very cool. And across the board, I'm like going through a massive rebrand that just feels really fun and exciting. You can go check out my website at emilyrushell.com. It needs a complete overhaul, so don't get too attached to anything you see there, but it does exist in the world. So
thank you. I'll put links to everything in the show notes so that it makes it easy for everyone to find you.
Beautiful. Sounds wonderful. Thanks, Jess.
All right. Thank you for being with me today, Emily. Thank you to everyone for listening. And I hope everyone has a great day. Thank you for joining me on this episode of Cultivate Contentment. I hope you found inspiration and practical tips to help you on your journey towards a more contented life. If you enjoyed today's episode, please consider subscribing or following the podcast on your favorite platform. And don't forget to leave a review to let me know your thoughts. For more content and community support, be sure to follow on Instagram at Grounded Farm Wife. Remember, you're not alone in this journey. Together, we can continue to cultivate contentment in our lives. Until next time, take care and stay grounded.